Let's start.
So hour 22, and I'm going to tell you about contracting Gaussians. And you know, a fun alternative name is let's do algebra by means of partial differential equations. But let me remind you the context. So we had formulas derived by intuitive combinatorial ways, combinatorial means. And then we checked them and they worked. And in fact, were useful to get not invariants. And there is a lot more to say about these not invariants, and a lot more will be said. But somehow there was some rigor lacking. So the purpose of today is to reinsert this rigor. It's not clear to me if it's necessary, because you see, to me, if something verifies, it means that rigor is like a technical issue. But this rigor also will give us some more information that will be useful later. So it's not a waste of time. Anyway, let me remind you what was the issue. So we had two Gaussians, so omega 1 e to the q1, and I was thinking of it as a morphism from A to B, which you know, this is invented notation, but what I mean is that it has, all of the things have Greek variables labeled by A and Latin variables labeled by B, okay? And then we wanted to compose it with omega 2 e to the q2, which is again a morphism with inputs Greek letters B, output Latin letters C. And the result should be omega e to the q, where again, inputs with A, outputs with C. And the problem is to find omega and to find Q. So Q here is a quadratic, so it actually decomposes into three parts. A Greek-Greek part, a Greek-Latin part, and a Latin-Greek part. Sorry, and a Latin-Latin part. And omega is a scalar, so actually there are four quantities we need to compute. And all the formulas look nearly the same, if you remember. I'm not going to rewrite them, but the formulas look nearly the same. So there ought to be a way to uniformize it. So let me uniformize it for you. So let me remind you how omega e to the q is defined. So one way is to turn all the letters in B to differentiations and differentiate the letters in B that appear here. Another way is to turn all the Greek letters here into differentiations and to apply them to the Latin letters here. But again, this is symmetric, and maybe the loveliest way to do it is as follows. You say, and I think this is one of the formulas I wrote. So it's e to the sum over all b's, so all over i in b, of the partial derivative with respect to zi, the partial derivative with respect to zi, of the product of the two things. So basically, I multiply the two things. All of this evaluated at all the zi and all the zi are equal to zero. So basically, I multiply the two quantities and I apply an equal number of derivatives with respect to the Greek letters and the Latin letters, right? Because when you exponentiate this, you just get sum of powers of this differential operator. So you end up applying an equal number of derivatives with respect to Latin and Greek letters, and they're actually paired. Which means, sorry, and then you evaluate at zi and zeta I is equal to zero. So it means that you're looking inside this for terms in which zi and zeta I appear with equal powers, exactly equal powers. So that's the same formula as the other formula, all the other formulas for the contraction. And I should say, this assumes that there are no name clashes. So assuming that, you know, there are no accidental Latin letters in C that are equal to the Latin letters in B. So so basically this is assuming B intersect C is equal to A intersect C is equal to the empty set. But you know, if this assumption doesn't hold, you just rename some variables. So it's really not a big deal. Okay. But then we are led to a completely to a different problem. So the problem is to compute in general e to the 1/2 sum f I j d z I d z j applied to some expression E. So calligraphic E usually for me stands for random expression. So I want to compute this differential operator applied to E with the substitution all the zi's are equal to zero, and I will soon give it a name. But why is this the problem I care about? So E becomes, this part here, this thing here, what's going on here? So here, zeta and z play exactly the same role. Okay? So there's no, so the question is, can I deal with them together? So really, I should have switched to Arabic letters, which would stand for either Latin or Greek. But since I don't know how to write Arabic letters, and if I wrote Hebrew, you would know how to use them, I just stuck to Latin. But these Latin letters here stand for Greek or Latin before. So if E is equal to that, then for some choice of the zi's, so basically the list of zi's should be twice as long as the length of B, because some of the zi's stand for the Latin letters and some of them for the Greek letters, then for some choice of zi's, this would be that. Where f, so what is what is f? So f are the coefficients of the pairings between those Latin letters and between these Latin letters. So basically the coefficients that would make this into that. And if you think about it, really the set of variables here is double the size of the set of variables here. Okay, or more precisely, it doubled the size of B. I mean, here there are, if B has n variables, this has 2n variables, Greek and Latin, this has 2n variables.
You have to turn off airplane mode.
What? Oh, sorry, this is annoying. I must have said something that my phone interpreted as, hey Google.
Forget, you'll have to turn off airplane mode.
Okay. But I'm in airplane mode because I don't want the phone to disturb, to bother me. But okay, I have to, I must learn from that and sort of turn off. Anyway, what did I say that could have sounded like that? I don't know. Anyway, so this is really, in the case of, if F comes from here, this will be a block diagonal matrix where you have Latin versus Greek, Latin versus Greek, and it's in fact the block diagonal matrix which has the identity on the off-diagonal blocks. So that you end up pairing Greek and Latin, you know, things with the opposite type, okay? And in fact, this particular matrix will give you twice the result you wanted. Hence, I've put the 1/2 here. Okay? And finally, so you see, since I want to define, I want to compute this, I don't want to think too much about where the matrix is coming from. So instead, so you know, this is if we came from here, but I'll just replace it with a general symmetric matrix. And by the way, you know, this is a symmetric expressions in the differential derivatives and partial derivatives commute. So basically, if this matrix was not symmetric, it would be, you could replace it with its symmetrization and get the same result. So no loss in making it a symmetric matrix. Okay, so this quantity I will call F colon E inside triangular brackets. So this is like F contracting E, F acting on E, inside triangular brackets. And this is the quantity I want to compute. So, how do you compute such things? Well, I don't know, maybe there are a zillion ways. But one way is to use differential equations. So in general, you know, this, whenever you have an exponential, you should be thinking differential equations. Because, you know, the main property of exponentials is that they satisfy some differential equation. So what I'll do is I'll put a lambda in here, and then try to write a differential equation for the result as a function of the parameter lambda. And then what I want is to substitute at the end lambda is equal to 1. Okay? So let's turn it into a formal definition. So let uppercase psi, this is the function we want to compute, or the thing we want to compute, let it be the thing that I will call square brackets, lambda f applied to E, which is, by definition, E to the lambda over 2 sum dzi dz, oops, sorry, I forgot, fij dzi dzj. So this operator applied to E, and this time I'm not substituting zi, and I'm not substituting the zi equals 0, so I'm trying to compute something more general. And if you want to reduce to this, all you have to do is to, so if I'm able to compute this, you substitute lambda equals to 0, and to 1, and evaluate at all the z's are equal to 0. Okay? Good. Okay. Again, everything is about exponentials. Right, there is an exponential here, and in fact, even this expression, well, now I wrote it as a general expression, but it came from here, which is the exponent, which in the bulk thing here is the exponential of a quadratic, so it's an exponential. Okay? So, and my hope is that this will also be exponential, an exponential in some sense. So I want to switch to writing everything in terms of logarithms. Okay? So let lowercase psi be the logarithm of uppercase psi. Okay, so I want to, so what I really want to compute is the logarithm of that. Again, the logarithm of a Gaussian is the quadratic form. I want to compute some quadratic form. So I want to compute this logarithm, and let me give a name for this. So this will be the curly bracket of lambda f with acting on e, where e is the logarithm of calligraphic e. Okay? So in other words, this, by definition, is the logarithm of lambda f acting on e to the lower, to uppercase e. Okay. Okay. So claim, these two quantities satisfy certain PDEs. And the way we will find them is by solving these PDEs. Ugh, now my thing doesn't show the time anymore. Ugh. Okay. Okay, so we will solve them by solving the PDEs. So let us figure out what are the PDEs. So first of all, uppercase psi at lambda equals to zero. So really, it will be a PDE about the derivative with respect to lambda, or an equation about the derivative with respect to lambda. So such an equation, you need an equation for the derivative, but you also need an initial condition. So the initial condition is that psi at lambda equals to zero. Well, if lambda is equal to zero, you're exponentiating zero times the differential operator, so you get zero, the exponential of zero, so you get one, so you get just calligraphic e. So lambda at equal to zero is the expression you started from. And the more fun thing is that the partial derivative with respect to lambda of psi, so, well, I actually told you a lie about the interesting thing about e to the x. The interesting thing about e to the x is not that e to the x differentiated is e to the x, but that e to the ax is e to the x is e to the a differentiated is e to the ax times a. And this is true if a is a scalar or a is a matrix or a is an operator of any type. So in our case, if I differentiate this with respect to lambda, I will get, so basically, one over two times this will pull out of the exponential, and I will still have the exponential, and it will still be acting on E, so the result will be lambda over two. No, not lambda over 2, 1 over 2, and differentiated with respect to lambda, sum Fij dzi dzj acting on the same E. So if you have seen the Schrödinger equation or the heat equation, this is a cousin. So basically, the Schrödinger equation and the heat equations are special cases of this for different values of f. Okay, for different, if f is imaginary, then it's the Schrödinger equation, right? If f is an imaginary multiple of the identity, then this is the Schrödinger equation, and if f is a real multiple of the identity, then this is the heat equation. But this is a more general thing. This has nothing to do with analysis. just to be clear, everything here is pure algebra. Like, everything is with, these are, this is all happening on, in a space of power series, or power series or polynomials in these Latin letters. And adding lambda just means that I allow an extra parameter lambda and I'm computing a power series with it, relative to it. Differentiation with respect to lambda makes sense on power series. You just replace every place you see lambda to the k, you replace it by k lambda to the k minus 1. Differentiation with ZAI, I mean, this is all pure algebra. There is no PDE here, only the symbols of PDE. Okay? That's one comment. The other comment is, if a solution exists to this equation, sorry, not if. This equation has a unique solution. Solutions exist and are unique. Solutions exist and are unique. So I could tell you, use the existence and uniqueness theorem of ordinary differential equations. But then you'll say, but this is not an ordinary differential equation, it's a partial differential equation. But it's really an ordinary differential equation in an infinite dimensional space. It's an ordinary differential equation with respect to the variable lambda, in which the unknown is a function of lambda in the space of polynomials in the Z's, which is an infinite dimensional space. So you'll need to think a little bit why the differential equations, the uniqueness and existence of solutions of ODEs works in this case. Even though I told you this isn't analysis at all, and that theorem is certainly a theorem from analysis. But it's much easier to reprove it from scratch. So let's reprove it from scratch, okay? The unknown here, psi, is a power series in lambda. Let's determine it degree by degree in lambda. So the coefficient of lambda to the power 0, in other words, the constant term with respect to lambda, is, you get it by substituting lambda equals to 0, and it was given. Now let's figure out the coefficient of lambda to the power 1, so the term proportional to lambda. That coefficient, if you differentiate it with respect to lambda, will become a power series. What am I doing? Sorry, this is not e. This is psi. This is the exponential of the different, sorry, this is psi. Right, I mean, this is, right, I'm sorry. If you differentiate this, you get the partial derivative going down, but then you get the but you still get the exponential acting on e, but the exponential acting on e is psi. Sorry. So let's go back. So now I want the coefficient of lambda to the 1 in e. Its derivative with respect to lambda, well, if you differentiate something with respect to lambda, if you differentiate lambda to the 1 with respect to lambda, you just get 1. So the coefficient of lambda to the 1 will become independent of lambda over here. So it will be determined by the part of this which is independent of lambda, which is psi, or a certain differential operator applied to psi at lambda equals to 0. But psi at lambda equals to 0 was already found. So therefore I can know that the coefficient of lambda in psi, and it is determined uniquely. Now, The coefficient of lambda squared in psi, right? I have to find a power series, so I'm finding it degree by degree. The coefficient of lambda squared in psi is determined by the fact that if you differentiate this with respect to lambda, you get, well, twice this coefficient times lambda. So I need to look at the term proportional to lambda here. The term proportional to lambda here will come from the term proportional to lambda in psi and apply to its own differential operator. But the term proportional to lambda in psi was already determined, and so on. So basically, by induction on powers of lambda, you find that the solution exists and is unique. Okay? Good. So claim number two. So I want to say a similar thing for lowercase psi. So for lowercase psi, the differential equation is as follows. So lowercase psi at lambda equal to zero is, so basically at lambda equal to zero, I need to take the logarithm of this at lambda equal to zero. So I take the logarithm of e, so it's lowercase, it's uppercase e. And I claim that the differential, sorry, that the derivative with respect to lambda of lowercase psi is equal to 1/2 sum over I and j, same as here, Fij multiplying the second derivative dzi and zj of psi plus dzi psi multiplied by dzj psi. I'll prove this in a moment, completely algebraically. But before proving it, let me say that this statement still holds for exactly the same reason. So before we had a linear PDE. This is a non-linear PDE, because the right-hand side is non-linear. But the exact same argument, it just doesn't matter. The exact same argument proves existence and uniqueness of solutions, just degree by degree. Okay? Anyway, why is this true? Okay, so number one was proved as I was describing it, so I don't need to prove it. Number two, I need to prove. So how do I prove number two? Well, I simply substitute e to the lowercase psi into the uppercase psi and see what is the differential equation that I get for lowercase psi. So so proof of two, substitute e to the psi into psi in equation number one. So what do we get? D lambda e to the psi. Psi is a function of lambda, so I mean this is not trivial. Is equal to 1/2 sum over I and j of dzj. Sorry, I forgot the fij. Fij dzi dzj e to the psi. Okay? God, I hope it will come out right. So, okay. When you differentiate by the chain rule is of course a theorem in algebra if it wasn't clear. But I mean, it's true in algebra. So, by the chain rule, this is d lambda psi multiplied by e to the psi. Okay? So this should be equal to, okay, so 1 half sum Fij dZi. So let me differentiate this with respect to Zj. So I get, right, so if I differentiate e to the psi with respect to Zj, I get dZj e to the psi times e to the psi, again by the chain rule, right? And now, let's differentiate it with, and now let's differentiate this with respect to Zi. So I get 1 half sum Fij, but now come Leibniz's rule, which is of course a theorem in algebra. So if I differentiate this with respect to Zi, I get, if you know, I get either I differentiate this and keep that, or I keep that and differentiate that. So if I differentiate this, I get dZi dZj e to the psi. No, what have I done? Sorry. I differentiate this with respect, I want to differentiate this with respect to Zi. But Zi and Zj commute. Differentiation with respect to Zi and Zj commute. So if I differentiate this, I get dZi of this is dZj of psi. Sorry, if you differentiate an exponential, you get, by the chain rule, you get the derivative of the inner function multiplied by the exponential. Sorry, so now I'm differentiating this with respect to Zi, and that's simply dZi dZj psi. Plus, the alternative is to apply, times e to the psi. This is Leibniz's rule. Plus, the alternative is to apply the dZi to that. So I'll get dZj psi, and now I'm differentiating this with respect to dZi, so I get dZi psi e to the psi. Okay? I just used the chain rule, nothing. And now, e to the psi cancels here, and here, and here, and you're left exactly with the differential equation I wrote. I guess the only difference is that I wrote second derivative as twice differentiate, and here I've wrote it as different notation. Okay? Good. So this is the equation I want to solve. You know, everything leads to this. This is the equation that I want to solve. Okay. So I will erase this because there is nothing good to say about it except it's arithmetic, and I want to solve this equation. Well, I will not quite solve it, right? I will tell you how to solve it in some specific cases. So basically what I want to tell you is that F, so theorem, proposition, I don't know what to call it, proposition. So F applied to any expression that you multiply by a Gaussian, so Gij, Zi, Zj. So if you want to, in fact, all I'm telling you is, well, I want to compute lambda f applied to E, where E is arbitrary, I'm going to tell you how to factor out, if E has a Gaussian part, how to factor it out. Okay? And the E's I really care about do have a quadratic part in them. In fact, they have more, because Q1 and Q2 is quadratic with respect to also the variables in A and C. So with respect to the variables in B, it's not just a quadratic. It's a quadratic plus a linear term plus a constant term. So this is half the, so this is a part of the result. This is the part of the quadratic which is in the variables that get contracted. This may contain more stuff. Okay. Anyway, so the proposition says that this is equal to, one more thing before I can continue. So I want this to be a symmetric matrix, the GIJ, because you see, if it wasn't symmetric, I could symmetrize it, because this is symmetric. And the other thing is, for this to make sense, it has to be small. So again, the meaning of small is algebraic. It means it's proportional to H bar. It's proportional to some power, some variable with respect to which we are allowed to take power series. Okay? But this will be invisible for everything we do. Anyway, here is the claim. The claim is that this is equal to the determinant of 1 minus fg to the power negative 1/2 e to the 1/2, and then the matrix g times the identity minus fg inverse. So take this matrix and look at its ij entry and multiply it by zi, zj, and I forgot to write summation over I and j, but this is quadratic form, so you have to sum. To all of this, you apply the contraction with respect to f, to the quadratic form f times 1 minus gf inverse. So instead of contracting with f, you contract with this. And this you applied to E. You apply the substitution that all the variables in ZB goes to 1 minus fg inverse zb. Why? So it's a horrible formula. But what has it allowed us to do? It allowed us to factor out a quadratic and replace it by closed form formulas, which might be messy, but at least are closed form, and contractions in which you can say that E does no longer has a quadratic part. And contractions in which E no longer has a quadratic part are much easier, as we shall see later. Okay? And then the claim is that if you specialize to the case where F is this matrix, the zero identity, identity zero, and where G is given by whatever comes out of the whole process we did here, so by the quadratic part of Q1 and Q2 with respect to the Greek and Latin variables in B, whatever that comes out to be. The claim is that if you do this, then it reduces to the formulas of last class. Okay? Sorry, and if you also figure out how to handle this, then this reduces to the formulas of last class. Now, again, you can complain it's complicated, but this reduction is essentially pure algebra. I mean, just matrix algebra. It's just working with block with block matrices and figuring out that, I mean, if G and F are the block matrices that come out of that picture, then this formula reduces to the formula of last time. So all I need to do is to prove this formula and manage this. Okay. The interesting part of this formula, so this is the formula for the upper part, for the square bracket, but I'm going to prove it by the equation for the curly bracket. Okay? So, I need to, first of all, tell you what is the corresponding formula for the curly bracket. So, what is the curly bracket? So, we called it psi, and the curly bracket is the curly bracket of lambda f with the logarithm of what's written here. The logarithm of what's written here is 1 half ZB GZB, more precisely ZB transpose, where ZB is the vector of Z's. You know what? Maybe I'll just call it Z. Okay? So Z is just the vector of all the ZIs. Plus the logarithm of E, which I will call uppercase E. And the claim is, so I took the, you know, I took the corresponding thing to here, and the claim is that the result is the log of the right-hand side. So what's the log of the right-hand side? It's a sum of three terms. So it's the logarithm of the determinant to the power minus 1/2. But you see, okay, logarithm to the power minus of something to the power minus 1/2 is just 1 minus 1/2 times. The logarithm of the determinant is the trace of the logarithm. So I get the trace of the logarithm of identity minus fg plus the logarithm of this is 1/2 Z transpose G identity minus FG inverse Z plus the logarithm of this is the curly, oops, sorry, and I should have substituted, since I've replaced F by lambda F, I should also replace it on the right hand side. So this is lambda f, and this is lambda f. And the claim is, and the last thing becomes lambda f 1 minus lambda gf inverse colon e, to which you apply the substitution, Z goes to 1 minus lambda fg inverse Z. Wow. I didn't say it was pleasant. I just said it's differential equations. Okay. But it's not that bad. So let me call, okay, so this is psi. Let me call this one psi 1, this one psi 2, and this one psi 3, And you see, you know, I need to differentiate psi 1, psi 2, psi 3, so I let me have different formulas for the different parts. Okay? Also, for now, let's assume that this part drops. It's important. You can't drop it. You need to know what it is. But I want to get to some point. So for now, let's assume that it drops. In other words, let me do the special case where E is equal to 1, when you're really contracting one Gaussian against another. Okay? So, like, assume E is equal to 0, temporarily, just for the purpose of the following computation. So, I need to check that psi 1 plus psi 2 satisfy this differential equation. Yeah?
You mean curly E, right?
What?
Curly E.
Oh, no, this is E. Okay. Right, the notation in curly brackets, I use the logarithms. Mm. Okay, so I just need to compute all the derivative. So let's see, what is the partial derivative with respect to lambda of psi 1? You know, if I'm lucky, these things will simply satisfy the differential equation. So what is the partial derivative with respect to lambda of psi 1? Good. -1/2 and trace are linear operators. The derivative is just nothing. So this is equal to -1/2, the trace of, okay, the derivative of logarithm is 1 over. So 1 minus lambda f G inverse times the internal derivative, right? This is the chain law. So the internal derivative of identity minus lambda FG is negative FG. So I'll just put here FG, and the negative here becomes a plus. Okay. The derivative with respect to lambda of psi 2, right, I want to differentiate the sum. So the derivative with respect to lambda of psi 2 is, I need to differentiate an inverse of a matrix. Right, this is an inverse, I'm here inverting a matrix, which depends on a parameter lambda, and I need to differentiate it. So I need to know how to differentiate the inverse of a matrix, which depends on a parameter. How much time do I have? I don't. Let's do it very, very quickly. So basically, suppose you have a matrix you add epsilon times a matrix to another matrix. I want to know what is the part proportional to epsilon in the result. That's how you differentiate. So A and B are the matrices that appear somehow related to the matrices. Oh, you know what? It's even easier. In our particular case, the matrix A is the identity. So I'm silly. I'm being silly. It's even easier than that. So suppose you have I can just do it explicitly. I minus FG inverse is equal to I plus lambda FG minus lambda squared FG squared and so on by the geometric formula for a geometric series. So differentiating with respect to lambda, this is not at lambda equals to zero. I care about it at general lambda, not at lambda equals to zero. So I should have used the full formula. So A plus epsilon B inverse is equal to we are out of time. You know what? Okay, we're out of time, we'll have to continue. I'll just say that at this point, everything is explicit. You just write everything explicitly. It looks hard, it's not that hard, and at the end it satisfies this equation, and we're done. This is terrible, because we completely lost the geometry. We completely lost the combinatorial. We turned it into stupid algebra, but it's fully stupid algebra. So we should go do a second pass and try to understand what each of these equations really means, like a picture. What's the picture behind each one? I'll take pictures of the white of the board, and we'll have to continue next time from where we stopped. Sorry.